And welcome back to Sprinkles of SEL with U2L, a podcast on social and emotional learning, wellness, neuroscience, and healthy habits for educators or anyone in the education space. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Namratha.
And we are part of the SEL team. Shout out to Claire for stepping in during my absence. She is amazing. Very much appreciate her. She is a huge, huge asset to this team. So thank you, Claire.
She did amazing. Yes. Great job. So today's sprinkle of SEL is a continuation of last episode's topic, the power of relationships. So today we're going to be diving a little further into workplace conflict, the challenges that arise from this, and how we can navigate them to create a positive work experience for everyone. So Lauren, what does conflict look like, especially in our schools?
Yes, we've had this conversation with several educators and school leaders about this. This is a very common conversation, is conflict in our schools between the staff. And one thing that we recognize is our relationships, especially at the workplace, have such an impact on our health and well-being, even outside of the office.
Especially
outside of the office, as well as the satisfaction we have with our jobs. And there's studies, we'll link a study that supports that. We talked about that in the last episode. But when we experience conflict in our relationships, they can wear and tear gradually to the point where that relationship is no longer a healthy one. And if it's left unmanaged, it can be very, very toxic, and it can contribute to burnout and all of the things that we do not want educators to experience.
Absolutely, right. So hearing this, I think it then begs the question, right? Is conflict inherently a bad thing?
Is it, Namratha? What do you think?
Well, I'm going to say no. In fact, some conflict can be good for us to grow as emotionally and socially adept individuals, identify problem spots in our work, and grow stronger as a team. So without conflict, we can very easily fall into complacency in this concept, which is called groupthink, very easily. So that is to say, conflict is necessary for us to be able to grow positively and change and adapt as individuals.
Okay, but then if conflict is such a good thing, then why is it such an issue we face?
Yeah, it's a good question. And like you said, Lauren, it's the topic that keeps coming back up, especially when we are having our conversations with educators that we work with. And I think the answer to that is that conflict is a double-edged sword. So when managed appropriately, it has the power, right, to help us grow. But on the other hand, if it's left unchecked, to your point, it could ruin us. Research shows that U.S. employees report spending 3 hours on average per week involved in conflict. Furthermore, team leaders spend between 20 to 40% of their time managing one conflict after the other. So in reflecting on your own experiences in your workplace, start thinking about how much time are you spending in your day-to-day going between one conflict, right, to the other. So conflict is not just then a burden on our well-being and our workplace satisfaction, but it's a burden on our time as well. Yeah.
Well said.
Yeah.
So why does conflict occur? One reason conflict may occur is due to a misconception of what conflict really looks like. So in leadership, it can be easy to understand conflict as dissent. Mm-hmm. Positive dissent or rumbling, shout out to Brené Brown, on the other hand, can be productive for your team to air out their concerns and to work together to come to a place of understanding. So if you're unfamiliar with what rumbling is, I encourage you to check out Brené Brown and how she talks about rumbling. I love to rumble. We rumble a lot. Namratha and I rumble a lot at work. But when you find a team you can really rumble with, that's when the magic is like unleashed. Mm-hmm. You really come up with some great work. So to clarify, a rumble, when you rumble with your colleagues, you engage in a type of discussion with them. Everyone leans in with vulnerability and openness and curiosity, I think, is another key part of it. Focusing on addressing a problem or solving a situation or coming up with an effective solution. And kind of pushing against each other to really figure out what really is the best solution. And from the outside, if you don't have a good rapport with others, rumbling might kind of look a little weird. Like I know I've rumbled with people and others have walked past and they're like, what are those people
like,
doing?
Are they okay?
Like arguing about 10 different post-its on a board of which goes where. No, we're rumbling. We're really pushing against each other. We're leaning into trying to have an effective discussion about what the best possible solution is and remaining open and not so heavy with our feet, like not with our heels dug in, you will.
And I think just to add on to that point, you know, the rumbling is positive dissent, right?
Yes.
So this is counterintuitive to also, like, I think when we engage with anyone in a conversation, it's part of this is being able to navigate that conversation and go into it with positive intent as well.
Right.
And just ensure and assume that when somebody's pushing back against your idea, it's not like about you. It's not about you personally. It's
right.
about them trying to also address the problem.
Right. And then oftentimes you can take a break and mm-hmm. circle back and it's something you kind of massage and you work at figuring out the best solution over some time.
Mm-hmm.
But you go into a rumble with passion. You
yeah.
come with your thoughts very passionately. And the key to a good rumble is to really being just as passionate about listening to what your peers have to say.
Yes.
So rumbling, in essence, is kind of like productive conflict. And in my past experiences, rumbling, when you're truly able to be vulnerable with your team, really does help you come to the best possible solution in terms of whatever it is you're trying to work through. If you're planning a project, solving mm-hmm. a problem, mm-hmm. coming up with a new system, whatever the case may be. But vulnerability is key.
Yeah.
And respect is key. And passion is key.
Yeah. I think that's well said. I want to share an example. I had a recent conversation with an educator that had shared that part of the reason that she was perceiving that there was some conflict at her school was because her and she had conversations with her colleagues about this, but they felt like there wasn't really space to address any of their concerns. So they were kind of feeling like, it was only instructed to them to talk to one person on a campus, and then that one person would take it to somebody else, and then it would take it to somebody else, and then it would like travel all the way back up to the principal somehow, but that they would never have direct access to their own school leaders. And so they never felt like they had the space to rumble. So I think, and what she was sharing with me is like, there's a culture shift, right? So from being educators at a school, there's a difference between working in a school environment and working in what she felt was like a company at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think for our school leaders, I think this begs us to just ask yourselves, are you allowing your teams the space to rumble? Are you giving them the opportunities to come to you and feel like they can be vulnerable and feel like they can be heard? And maybe nothing really comes out of that conversation apart from the fact that they appreciate how much you've made them feel seen and heard.
That space to be vulnerable.
Yes.
Yes.
And that at the very least.
Relationships.
Correct. And maybe
trust.
Your hands are tied as a school leader, but at the very least, can we set that culture up in your campus just so they feel like they can come to you?
Right. Yep, I agree. And you can rumble with your grade level partners.
Mm-hmm.
That's when really great rumbling happens.
Yeah.
Or if you're a third grade math teacher, go rumble with the fourth grade math teacher about how you're doing your lesson and really say like, I need to level this up.
Mm-hmm.
My students aren't understanding. Help me come at this,
mm-hmm.
this particular concept and kind of go back and forth and engage in effective rumbling and effective conflict.
Yep. Yep.
So what else leads to conflict? A study was done examining 1,000 first-time managers in the workplace, and they determined there were four main triggers that caused 91% of workplace conflict.
That's insane.
Yes. So that's a majority of the conflict that takes place is... it has been determined that there are four main triggers. I'm going to share the following triggers with you, and I want you to reflect at how often you experience those triggers in your workplace. First one is vague performance standards. The second one is communication differences. The third one is unclear expectations. And the fourth one is unclear time constraints. So vague performance standards, communication differences, unclear expectations, and unclear time constraints. Take a minute and rank these four options in your head in order from most to least often occurrences in your workplace. Think about which ones happen the most often versus the least often. So in the study, Namratha, they determined the following. 14% were vague performance standards.
Okay.
That's the lowest.
Okay.
16% were unreasonable time constraints, though in educators, I would argue that there's that's probably a larger number. We know there's not enough time for you ever.
That's very fair.
22% were because of unclear expectations. And then 39%, the highest, were due to communication differences.
Wow.
So that's communication is key. And if you go to episode 8, we talk about compassionate communication and its place at in schools and in our workplace. But communication is so important. So if you're rumbling with somebody else, it's how you're going about communicating and how I'm going to also really plug in there. Consider your emotional intelligence. When you engage in communication with others, how aware of yourself are you? Are you just as aware of how you're coming across as how you're analyzing how those others come across to you?
Mm-hmm.
So effective communication.
Yeah. And just to add on to that point, I think it's so important just to be able to verbalize that thought process as well. I can't say like how much it's been helpful for me. Like I know in our conversations, Lauren, you will check in with me to be like, hey, is it okay if I'm sharing something like this? Like, is that making sense? Or vice versa. Like, you know, if we're having some sort of rumbling session at the very least to know like, hey, you know, I'm saying this because this is my thought process. This is where I'm coming from. And I'm not meaning to maybe offend you or like trigger you or anything like that.
Totally.
But we're just trying to be productive. And so once we also are more explicit in sharing out why we're saying something a certain way, I feel like that also helps us be more productive and be more understanding of each other as we have that conversation.
I agree. We take the person out of it. I think of a time when we were creating, we have a framework and we were creating a rubric to use as a tool to analyze what we've outlined in the framework. And so we cut up a whole bunch of statements. I don't know. There was probably like 40 statements.
There was a lot.
And we had to categorize them. And so I had categorized them and Namratha had categorized them. And then we were going to debate each and every one that we categorized and why we categorized it, where we put it.
And we did.
We for sure did, because we didn't agree on everything.
We
and
did
that's
it.
Not to say one of us was right or one of us was wrong, but the bigger part was discussing why we were thinking what we were thinking, to then shed some insight to help both of us really critically analyze.
Yeah.
Is this the best place to categorize this indicator?
Correct.
And why?
And I think that what came out of that conversation too that we had was you were able to articulate why you were thinking of an indicator being categorized in a certain way. And like that helped me understand your perspective. And then I ended up agreeing with you on that.
Right.
And vice versa. Exactly.
Yeah.
So there were places where we both, and it wasn't about who won or anything like
no,
that at the end of the day.
Not at all.
But I think it was that we both felt really accomplished too, because, you know, it's really that perspective of it's not you versus me, but it's you and me versus the problem.
Right.
And that's what this is.
Right. And I think that we had a space of, I disagreed with Namratha, Namratha disagreed with me, and we both said, no, I disagree with you. And here's why.
Yeah.
And the other person was like, oh, tell me, like, I can't get enough. Like, what is the reason? Like, help me, please help me understand, because how I interpreted it is this way. And so sometimes it was just a simple interpretation or perspective that we were able to effectively think through on the surface through communicating, but then it got deep. So rumbling allowed us to safely engage in those, that deep, vulnerable discussion.
I think, like you said, Lauren, going through these 4 points, I know you mentioned that unreasonable time constraints might be a bit of a bigger percentage when it comes to our educators' experiences than what's seen in this one study. And I have to agree. I feel like when we think about what our educators may be experiencing in particular, I feel like the first 2 things that come up for me is the communication differences and these time constraints. But I think we also have to think through then, you know, Why is conflict becoming such a problem in our working relationships? And I think there's a deeper level to this, right? So what is happening also in the brain? There's one concept that researchers have called transference. And this is basically a phenomenon where any conversations or even people sometimes, they may trigger just memories from a previous interaction. And it may not be an interaction you've had with that exact person. But when you have that trigger come up, you develop an automatic response. So we may be unconsciously repeating conflicts from our past that may have no correlation or bearing on our current relationship or the interactions that we're experiencing. And I have to say, like,
That's really loud.
In learning about this, I like had to reflect back on my own experiences of just like perceived conflict that I felt or maybe somebody else felt, mm-hmm. and thought through like, okay, am I actually having a problem maybe with this person? Or is it because maybe they're reminding me of somebody else or they're reminding me of a similar situation? Mm-hmm. And it really has nothing to do with this exact person. And so then
Can I just call out real quick?
Yeah.
You thought about yourself, like you were introspective. You didn't jump to, oh, it's that person. That person did something.
Yeah.
That person caused a conflict. You are working on your brain and being reflective internally before jumping to something else. And I think that's really important to call out.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Well, and I think because I'm also just a big believer and sometimes we attract things that we don't even recognize we're attracting. And so if I have unresolved conflict with somebody in my past, I feel like it's going to come back in some way that I'm not even aware of through somebody else maybe. So, and then we have to recognize how that transference happens. So that's one concept. And then the other concept is mirror neurons.
Tell me about these mirror neurons.
Mirror neurons. Hopefully we're getting the mirror part of it. But these are neurons that specialize in basically automatically picking up the signals that we receive that indicate that someone else is experiencing a certain emotion. And when we pick it up, it's encouraging us to then act in the same way. So if you're interacting with a colleague that is frustrated or angry, it's easy to feel that way ourselves without realizing that we're picking up on their emotions and we're not necessarily just reacting to something ourselves. So this is something which I feel like, again, we're putting a more of a neuroscientific way of framing what I feel like we experience a lot of the time, which is sometimes I feel like it's also easy to say like, yeah, like I'm just like really, I'm like, I'm an empath. I don't know if anyone's heard that. But I feel like I hear people say that sometimes. And I do agree that there's definitely people who are more able to pick up things than others. But sure. You know, sometimes when I hear that and then it's like, yeah, like they were really frustrated and so was I. And I was like, I wonder why.
Yeah, but there's also science behind is applicable across the board.
There is. So these mirror neurons are so real. They are picking up these emotions. So it does go back to empathy. If someone else is feeling sad, you are going to understand a little bit to a certain extent what they're feeling because your neurons are telling you to feel something similar.
Right, but it could also be toxic.
Yeah.
So who are you sitting at during your staff meetings?
Sorry?
Like to the educators.
Mm-hmm.
Which table do you choose to sit at when you head into your staff meeting?
That's a good question.
How are you monitoring your input and protecting your peace?
I will just say I had an experience where kind of to this point, like you're saying, I had to recognize I had to stem my interactions with one or two particular people in my past because I realized that I knew going into those interactions that I was looking for them to rant about something because I knew they were the people to go to be able to rant about something. So then they would just feel frustrated and then I would become more agitated because we were doing this together. And then I knew I was going into those interactions expecting that and wanting that for myself.
Yeah, you've conditioned those pathways in your brain to say like, oh, this is what happens when I engage with said person.
Correct. And then when I became more aware of like just even that thought process and I tried to actively start, you know, not fully cutting them off because I wasn't in a place that I could, but like being able to stem those conversations a bit or try to redirect them. They also realized I was not about, you know, just talking badly about somebody else or ranting about a situation to the point where they were. And I started, like you said, protecting my peace a little bit more.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's a good question.
Educators, you're surrounded by people who have very high levels of cortisol and are very stressed out. And so I really encourage you to think deeply about those mirror neurons and try to monitor what neurons you're mirroring. So how else do we navigate conflict? Let's review. We've already shared the first tip, which is to rumble, not grumble. The second tip is to recognize your triggers and that of others, which requires you to be culturally competent, A, in yourself and think about your triggers, but also open and considerate of others around you. And then the last one, our last tip of the day, is to be a bridge. Relationships are shared responsibility, and part of the responsibility you and the other person have is to recognize your differences and work to bridge that divide appropriately and respectfully. So talk to me. What does it mean, bridge that divide, Namratha?
Yeah. The Greater Good Science Center, they put together a really great list of 8 key concepts that come forth when we're talking about bridging our divide. So simply put, bridging the divide involves 1, recognizing our shared humanity. So for example, right, educators, remember the shared purpose that you have, the reason you are in that school building in the first place. 2, develop an understanding of the other person's point of view. So it's not about seeking to persuade that person to come to your side or change their mind, but develop that understanding. Why are they saying this? Where are they coming from? And 3, recognize that you don't need to give up your own beliefs or values to be able to do this. So bridging doesn't mean compromise. Hold on to your beliefs because they're important to you for your own reasons, but recognize that other people have their own.
Right. And 4, you have to do the work. You have to do your inner work. Just like Namratha thought earlier when she looked inward, when analyzing conflict or irritation that she had with somebody else, she had to like check herself. Like, is this really a conflict? Like, do I really feel this way?
Yeah.
Or is this being influenced by something else?
By something I didn't even realize. Mm-hmm. Right.
So you have to cultivate that right mindset before you take action, which requires you to be reflective. 5, take baby steps while doing so. Bridging is about small shifts over time. You don't need to shift gears into somebody else's point of view all of a sudden and change your personality just to gel with others. That's not what we're saying. Just be real, be yourself, acknowledge yourself, and also acknowledge others and what they're bringing to the table as well. 6, be modest and humble. What we mean by that is remember to protect your peace, practice mindfulness. And while it might be hard, you need to understand that you're not always going to be right in every situation. No person is right all of the time. And that's okay, right? 7, and so while you're practicing all of the above mentioned, specifically being modest and humble, be vulnerable. The work involved in bridging the gap usually involves a level of vulnerability. It's critical, but proceed with caution about who you open up with and who you're vulnerable to. You have to have that rapport and that respect established, but being vulnerable is key. And then 8, please note, however, not everyone should bridge. If you're being actively discriminated against, researchers actually suggest you don't seek to build bridges in these instances unless you've worked through the trauma yourself first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that is the end of our time for today. But before we close out, Lauren, what are our commitments for this week? I'll go first.
Okay.
Yeah, I really, really want to be better at just hydrating myself more.
That's a good one.
So I'm going to be a little bit better about just starting my day off with a cup of water, ending my day off with another cup, trying to make sure I am keeping myself consistently hydrated, because I've also recognized that sometimes when I'm like a little cranky in the middle of the day, I haven't eaten anything, I haven't drunk in any water. That's probably where I should start.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
I think not even just for the week, but I've really been seeking like the having a positive predisposition on all things. Mm-hmm. And so, glass half full mindset, if you will.
That. I love
really
that.
Working with that. And it's, I feel it. I feel a transformation already, but I want to keep that up.
I love that. Think good and you attract good too.
Yes, yeah. Of course.
I love it.
So before we close out, we also need to read our mindful moment. And today's is short and sweet. Again, it's from our book, A Year of Mindfulness for Beginners by Lee Papa. And today's says, make this your mantra today. Quote, I have the courage to lead a deliberate and resilient life with ease and grace. We thought that was very appropriate for today's episode. And also, that's the end of season 2.
Oh my gosh.
We'll link all of our resources that we've referenced in our show notes, so feel free to check it out. And don't shy away from sending us an email. If you have a topic you want us to cover next season, go ahead and send an email to sel@unitedtolearn.org. And of course, we can't sign off without saying, educators, we see you, we love you. We so very much appreciate you. We know that you're in the thick of it in spring right now, but this too shall pass. This is just a moment. And I know that you will close out the school year fabulously, and just know we're always in your corner. So until next time, season 3.
See you next season.
Bye.
Bye.